Ja. Sorry for a slight delay there, but welcome again. What we're going to do today is that we are going to continue on some of the essential terminologies, the basics for the research language. Today, but we're also going to give some introduction to your first assignment in the course, which is a short essay that should be delivered by next week. So you have a week from now to write a short essay, but I'll give a better introduction to that a bit later here. Just to remind you about a couple of these terms that we used last time. We talked about formulating research problem, and we talked about the specificity and the need for being specific on when you describe variables. And that variables should in some way express a relationship. And in connection with that, I gave you some definitions of independent and dependent variables. I repeat this because it seems like a pretty straightforward thing, but people have problems with these two terms. For instance, independent does not mean that it's independent of your research or anything like that, that it isn't dependent on anything else in the world. It may be. But we use this term here because we say that this is what we have control over. We are controlling the independent variable, or the situation is controlling it or something. While the dependent variable is what we want to measure, whether is varying depending on the independent variable. So if I, for instance, say that girls are more likely to be good in math than boys, what would be the independent and dependent variable there? Someone try it right away. Gender is independent, right? Yeah. Gender is independent variable, while some kind of a score for, or some kind of an operationalization for math skills would then be the dependent variable. So, and in your the first assignment that you have, you're going to read a couple of articles, and one of the things that you're going to do is to identify independent and dependent variables in those articles. It's not necessarily as straightforward as the example we had here now, of course. It may be more complex. It may be several variables. It may be several independent and dependent variables. There may be levels of these variables, but basically a variable should belong to either the group of independent variables or the group of dependent variables. We often refer to things as, say, confounding or third variables as well. They are typically independent variables that also may affect the dependent variable. We'll get back to some of these examples. First, we said that a research question should be some kind of a research, it should be some kind of a question. But it's very, it glides over into the next term that we're going to talk about here, and that is the term hypothesis. It should be easy to translate a research question into a hypothesis. Well, the research question is a question. The hypothesis is a best guess of some kind of an outcome of the research question. And that should, of course, also be a very specific thing, which is possible to where the hypothesis that you state should be possible to either reject or to be confirmed. So it should be testable in some way. Can of course be qualitatively tested by literature analysis and stuff like that, or based on theory, could be. But in this context, we are talking about empirical research and maybe numbers. So in a strict form like this, it should be possible to measure whether it is true or not. And we have two kinds of hypotheses that we always test against each other. We have a research hypothesis that says something about, that is the active hypothesis about the possible outcome that we believe in, that we want to test whether it's true or not. And that is something that we always measure against what we call a null hypothesis, which is saying that there is no relationship between the variables that we are raising in the research question. So if we have this thing about let's say gender and, or says, let's take something really straightforward. I think there is there, let's say this is the research question, is there a relationship between how good you are at playing World of Warcraft and your age? I believe there is such a relationship. I don't know why people would do research on that, but let's just state something like that. What would a research hypothesis be here? Can anyone try one of those? Yeah? Do you need to be that specific? You say people about 15 are good at playing World of Warcraft? Can't you just say that the older you are, the better you are at playing World of Warcraft or something like that? That would be a very specific guess of an outcome here. What would a null hypothesis be? Well, if nobody dares to take it, it would of course be that, or in normal circumstances, it would be to say that there is no relationship between age and how good you are at playing World of Warcraft. So what you do then when you do some kind of a hypothesis testing here and statistical hypothesis testing is to test whether we should keep or reject the null hypothesis. That's actually what we test. So what we do in statistical hypothesis testing, when we talk about significance, and we'll get back to that, is to say that there should be less than maybe 1% or maybe less than 5% likely that the null hypothesis actually is wrong. So there should be an overwhelming, chance that the research hypothesis is true for us to keep it and reject the null hypothesis. And that is the falsification principle, which we touched last time, which is it's kind of problematic for us because we tend to like to confirm things rather than reject things. So this is in that line. So remember this, scientific hypothesis, usually called H1, and null hypothesis, H0. And that is the things we test against each other. And of course, what this is all about is to determine the relationship between two variables. How certain are we that this relationship, the relationship that we believe is there, is true, is actually a cause-effect relationship? And it's not necessarily a straightforward thing, even if we can measure some kind of a change between two situations. Even though that is the case, and that's often the case. If we use an example like, I think we touched this as some kind of an example last time as well. There have been a couple of nasty accidents on the highway from here to Lillehammer, for instance, just to take an example. And as researchers that are concerned about highway safety or something like that, we want to check whether a campaign that we have launched actually had the anticipated effect. And to do that, we set up a situation which is probably something like this. We test something. We take a measurement of speed, for instance, on a given stretch, or we measure 100 cars or something like that, or use some instrument to measure mean speeds over a couple of days or something like that. Then we introduce the campaign that we're going to launch. It could be, typically a campaign like this could be putting up a typical or some new signs or something like that, or launch some kind of ad campaign in the local newspapers, I don't know. That's not important here. And after we've done this, we want to check whether we actually reached our goal. And this is a typical situation which you may get into as well. You may get into a situation where you're going to measure the effect of some kind of something you do within an organization or something. You have a before measure, you have an after measure. And in our case, which is hypothetical, we see that the mean speed decreased significantly in this period. We can throw away our null hypothesis and say that, yes, there was an effect. But this is where we tend to shortcut a lot. We measure such a relationship, but how can we make sure it is true? Is there a causal thing? Is there a cause effect thing here? Did this campaign result in this reduced speed on the highway? Can we be certain of that in such a situation? Why? Some other accident, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Which may be more important than the campaign. Could be other things as well. Any other suggestions? I can try to go through a couple of these, of course. Time of the year, which is typically a third variable. Seasonal changes. Maybe we had a very bad weather pattern in the after measure here. So it was a lot more rain or something like that. Or maybe there were some, for all I know, road work or something taking place somewhere. Well, the point is that there is a number of things you need to do to actually say that there is a cause-effect relationship happening. And that is what we tend to try to do when we apply scientific methods that's why we do research. That's why we don't only measure before and after. As we said, there you could try to line up a number of these factors. History is an obvious one. Something else has happened. That's what we have talked about here. In this particular campaign, that would be a very obvious explanation, or a possible explanation that we will have to rule out and that we will have to control for to be able to say that there is a relationship here. But there may be other effects taking place as well, which is maybe a bit more complicated to measure. I mentioned here maturation. Things tend to change over time. That's a natural thing. Let's say you're trying to measure reading speed or something like that, reading abilities of school children. And for young children, a couple of weeks, if you measure one class 1 year, a week later than you measure them the last year, or the class you measured last year, maybe that's a more important factor than what you have changed in between. Just an example. But things tend to mature. Now and then you also have test effects. If people in this situation here, with this attitude campaign, maybe they also saw an article in the newspaper that tomorrow we're going to take some measurements. Tomorrow these researchers are going to measure speed again to see whether it really had worked. Well, that may of course result in increased speeding, I don't know. But we don't know necessarily how these factors affect the situation. But this is always an important thing. I guess we'll get back to this when it comes to experimental designs, because people tend to be extremely good at discovering that we are measuring them, and they tend to react based on that. Yeah, obvious things is that, of course, the instrument that you use for measurement may have changed. But let's just stick a little bit to the last one here. Are you familiar with this term, regression effects? It's just a statistical phenomena. And it's more likely that the first observation is more extreme, or the more you measure things, the higher is the tendency to get towards the actual mean for something. So taking one measurement is likely to be an extreme measurement in one way or another, while taking 10 measurements is likely to get you down to the where the actual mean value is. So that's the meaning of a regression effects. So we should be aware of this. When we measure something, we have a tendency to, when we discover something, an effect, and it's strong, we tend to avoid to measure it again because it tends to get back to a no effect situation. Maybe we will see this when you're going to do some science projects here. A lot of these effects that we measure will seem quite obvious in the beginning, but when we do repeated measurements, the effects may vanish. It's also by the way, a very central thing when you discuss ethics in research. What kind of results should you report? Few measurements and extremes is something you should be a bit careful about. You should try to confirm them before you actually report such things, which you didn't expect to happen, which isn't necessarily theory-based. Another thing to be aware of is that whether you the fact that you see a relationship between two variables doesn't necessarily mean that there is a cause and effect relationship taking place here. And you may have heard this, the first one here. There is an extremely strong correlation in Australia. If you take a, if you look at an Australian beach, there is a very strong relationship between ice cream sales and shark attacks. So, of course, you could interpret this to mean that sharks like ice cream or something like that. Sharks enjoy biting humans who have eaten ice cream or something like that. It's probably not the case, right? What's the interpretation here? And this is an obvious one. Warmer water doesn't necessarily bring sharks closer to the beach, but maybe, but at least it brings more people out in the sea to be possible food for sharks. I don't know. But you could have more, you can, well, of course, what you would say in the first case is that, well, here is a third variable, actually, which is, of course, this isn't related at all, probably. Because there is a third variable that affects both of these, and that's the temperature variable. So temperature, increased temperature may lead to more shark attacks. That's possible, but ice cream sales don't, of course. The next one here, well, I actually can't explain it. It must have something to do with some seasonal variation or something, I don't know, in stock prices. There's probably some seasonal variation in skirt length as well, so. But you can find numerous of these kinds of, let me see if we can get this. There was a link here to a very, you could of course try it yourself, but see if I can get it up here. We often refer to this as spurious correlations, and there are actually sites on the net that's dedicated to these things. Why didn't that come up there? There it is. So, and you can find a number of these things actually in numbers. When you take a large number of data, we take large data materials and just do correlation tests, where you're not run by any kind of theory or hypothesis, you always come out with a number of these very strange correlations. So the more the U.S. spends on space and technology research, the more people take suicides by strangulation, which is, of course, a stupid connection, but it's extremely strong and highly significant, of course, if you do this in a research context. It's very unusual to see correlations like this, 0.99. So this is a strong linear relationship. It tends to vary in the same way as well during this curve. So it's extremely strong. And if you go to this site, you will see a number of these things. Some are explainable, some are just impossible to understand. But they tend to have this in common, that they are the result of something else taking place. They may be the effect of something else taking place, but they may also be the result of pure coincidence. So even if you see a relationship, it may be due to pure luck or unluck or whatever. Because some of them may be fun, so maybe it's luck, I don't know. Another threat to cause-effect relationships, it has to do with something we call the direction problem. Is A causing B, or may it be the other way around? The literary reference here is from Holberg and Jeppe på Berget. So those of you who are Norwegians or Danish maybe may have some reference to this. Is Jeppe's life miserable because he drinks so much? Or does he drink because his life is miserable? He would probably say the latter. His mother meant the first. And these kinds of directional problems is something that we meet now and then in research. And they may be very challenging to answer. And one such example that we meet now and then, the version that we meet now, is whether there is a relationship between violence that you're exposed to in games, very realistic games, where you are seeing and doing a lot of violent things. Is that going to cause more violent behaviors in real life? That's something we are very concerned about now. We've been concerned about the same stuff for the last 50 years, maybe, or maybe even a lot more. Before this, we had the more easy availability to films, for instance, at home. Kids could see more violent films when they could buy videos or buy CDs. Before that, we got the TV, and that's really where this debate started in a scientific context. Did access to TV, did the fact that American kids started watching TV without their parents there when they came back from school, did that cause more violent behavior in schools later? And I guess before this, we had the same debate about reading books. I don't know. So it's a reoccurring debate. You can see this all the time. So, is there such a relationship? Because there is an alternative explanation. Because what they found out then back in the 60s, or maybe it was even a bit earlier, when they tried to measure this relationship, was that kids that watched a lot of TV and were exposed to a lot of action and violence in TV were more violent in schools. They were more likely to express themselves in a violent way, and their peers, their fellow students, also were more likely to say that, well, he is on a scale of 1 to 10, he is 8, he is 9. They were more likely to judge them as violent. So the more you were looking at video violence, the more aggressive you were. And that's pretty established, actually. There is such a relationship. It's not very strong, it's somewhat weak, but it's there. So, how should we interpret this? Is there a cause-effect thing going on here? Does video violence result in more aggressive behaviors? Does anyone have an alternative explanation? It is up there. Because the alternative is, of course, is it so that more aggressive people are more likely to be attracted by video violence or video games these days? What do you think? The gaming people tends to say that no. It's the second explanation, right? A lot of people who do research on media say that, while a lot of more socially concerned people are saying the first. This is a difficult thing to measure. You can say, well, somewhat the consensus today is that there is a little bit of both here taking place. And there is an element of individual variability. Who is affected by video violence? Not everybody is. Some are. So maybe if you are somewhat sensible, it's a sensitivity thing. So if you are sensitive to this, if you have these tendencies to express violence or something like that, you may be triggered by seeing violence as well. It only goes for a very few people, but for most, it doesn't affect them at all. So that's the... it may be a bit too short as an answer. And there may be others who want to debate this or get to another conclusion, but the final thing on this area, as I've seen it, has to do with individual sensibilities to these kinds of stimuli. But this is a thing that you may meet now and then when you do research. Problems with determining this relationship. Also, third variables, we just touched them. Maybe more difficult and more something that you need to nuance a little bit. For instance, you tend to find these kinds of relationships, which may be true, but which may be very weak compared to the actual very strong effects that you have now and then. An example of this is some research I've been involved with myself, where we were measuring a number of personality factors in a, you could say, a census, which is a, what's it called? They call it census thing in America. I think it's called, also here is Folkehelseundersökelse, the people's health. We investigate, we ask a representative sample of Norwegians about their health status, their how they work, how much they earn, a lot of socioeconomic variables. And in some of these, when they do these undersökelser, this kind of these studies, we tend to now and then we throw in a number of new questions that where we try to either validate some kind of an instrument, or we want to actually say something about something new. And in this case, we measured a lot of personality variables and tried to match that with how they did in school, how their income levels was, some other socioeconomic variables, but also some health habits. The relationship I'm talking about here wasn't something actually we were that much interested in, but it's just an example of something that we found in this, in a study like this. We were measuring sensation seeking, individuals' tendency to seek new or strong stimuli in their environment, whether you like to sit down quiet with a cup of tea and watch TV, or whether you like to climb mountains or put yourself in risky situations, drive fast in a car, whatever. These things are our stuff we measure here. And when we do this, we find a lot of relationships that's statistically significant. And one of them was, for instance, how often do you have sexual intercourse and sensation seeking. And we found that the higher you were on the sensation seeking scale, the more likely you were to have, or the more often you had sexual intercourse. So this is a, could we then, it can of course be that this relationship is true, but when we control for a second factor here, which seems to have a very strong effect both on sensation seeking and on sexual habits, namely age, this effect completely vanishes. So if we didn't measure age in this case, if we didn't control for age, we could get to the conclusion that there is a relationship, and you can also say that theoretically there could be a relationship here. But that is way, way smaller than the effect of age. But of course, it may still be the case. But then you would have to argue. And you would have to take age out of the equation and see what is left of the effect when you take age out of it. And in this case, the effect was extremely small. It was still there, but it was extremely small, while it seemed to be large in the beginning. So we found a strong relationship until we took age into account in this case. So when you say something about cause effect, there is a number of, sorry for this one being in Norwegian, but there is a number of different things that may be the case when it comes to the effect or the effect that the third variable actually has on the cause-effect relationship. The ideal situation is, of course, that X leads to Y. And this set variable is just an irrelevant one. It doesn't matter. H didn't matter here. You may have a more typical one where X is part of this, and X and there is actually an XY relationship, but there is also an effect of a set here. And when you do when you measure both the X and the Z, well, you can apply statistical methods to see how strong this effect is compared to this one. So that is one of the things we do when we do statistics, typically on empirical data like this, where we have good control over a number of independent variables. These will then be, the X and the Z here will then be independent variables, both of them, while this is the dependent variable. Z may also be some kind of a prerequisite to get from X to Y. It needs to be there for this to happen. So this is another possible effect of a third variable, which needs to be analyzed at least. It can be an intermediate thing. So X leads to Z, that again leads to Y. Then this one is highly this is absolutely unrelated. So the actual explanation is this one. And there may be several X's that leads to the Z here. And as was maybe the case, which we saw in this first example that I gave, or the last example I gave, with the relationship between sexual habits and sensation seeking and H, namely that H is both have both something to do with sensation seeking and sexual habits. So this is actually the explanation for the variation in both of these variables. So there is a number of different effects that we may see from third variables. And then it's time for a break. Let's meet in 15 minutes.